Thank you, Sharon. I'm going to be talking to you today a little bit about the same kind of situation that Rosanna just talked about in stored product entomology, but I'll switch a little bit into livestock entomology, but we're seeing similar things happening. So I'd like to first give you a history of some of the things we've done in the past, what we are doing currently, and where we see ourselves going in the future. Let's see, how do we... So the overview, I'm going to give you first a brief introduction of what livestock entomology is, going back into some work that was done on mitigation of cattle fever tick, screwworm, and cattle grubs, which were three important and are still very important in livestock entomology. Some critical issues that we're facing now, especially with some emergence of zoonotics, and where we see ourselves going in the future. So this is what I'll talk about today. So livestock entomology is a rather large field. It's looking at insects that affect animals, and it also includes things such as flies, house flies, face flies, that can be considered more of a nuisance pest, as well as mosquitoes, ectoparasites such as lice, and some of the mites, which are not insects, but are still under this category. And then we also look at communicable diseases such as West Nile and Lyme disease, which are zoonotics that can also be in humans as well. So we are a rather large field where we can be considered also veterinary entomologists or medical entomologists. So the line, we kind of don't know where we fit. Some people think we're livestock entomologists. Others consider themselves more medical, or they might consider themselves as veterinary entomologists. Some of the past issues, I'm just going to go briefly into three of them. Here on the left is the cattle fever tick. We also have the screwworm in the middle and cattle grubs on the right. So what I'm going to do now is kind of give you an overall basic introduction to some of these issues that go way back into the 1800s, and some of these issues are no longer problems for us now. So the first one, looking at Boophilus microplus, this is a cattle fever ticks. These ticks are very problematic in Mexico, for example. And they vector a disease called Babesia, and it causes bovine babesiosis. And in 1868, there was an outbreak among native cattle that happened in Illinois and also in Indiana and Kentucky due to importations from cattle that came up from Texas. And apparently these cattle were healthy, but then we had these problems occurring in these native populations of cattle. And what was happening in Texas, the cattle were actually immune to this disease due to frequent exposure. But northern cattle were very susceptible, so we were starting to see this problem in these northern areas. By 1906, due to the spread of this disease, there was the creation of the National Cattle Fever Tick Eradication Program, and it covered 14 southern states that were included. And what they did, they had a control strategy where they would actually take these cattle through these chutes, dip them in insecticides, and hopefully prevent ticks from spreading this disease. By 1943, the eradication program was complete, and now there is actually a permanent quarantine zone along the Rio Grande River in southern Texas. Now, cattle that are actually coming through the border from Mexico into the United States have to go through treatment before they can be imported. So that's what we're seeing today. And now we're starting to see some issues, which I'll talk about in a few minutes, with the cattle fever tick. The second insect I'd like to give a little brief introduction to you is the screwworm. And screwworm, this is Cochleomaya omnivorax. And it is an insect that has now been eradicated from the United States. Here you can see this is a female. She lays her eggs usually in small wounds, tiny little wounds that can be on the cattle, on any kind of animal. The female comes in and lays eggs on that wound. And the larvae will then develop inside that womb wound, penetrating down into it, kind of screwing in. That's where they get their name, screw worm. The posterior spiracles are on the outside, so they have to breathe. Eventually, what happens, you get other females coming in and laying more eggs into that wound. And what you see is you have secondary infections coming. But here, you can see the mouth parts, they feed away at the tissue, bacteria comes in, and you have detrimental effects on the animal. Eventually, the larvae will then pupate, and they pupate in the soil, eventually coming out and into the adult form and then going on and causing more problems. The issue with screw worm, it was very detrimental to the livestock. And here you can see some examples. Once screw worm would come in and attack your animal, basically within 5 to 7 days, your animal could be dead due to secondary infection. And in the 1800s, 1825 was one of the first times that it was kind of written down and documented of screw worm being serious problems in the Southwest. Then in 1930s, we saw some spread of this disease. This was more of a southern problem in the southwest in Texas. It was then spreading into other areas, causing about $400 million damage annually. By the 1940s, 1950s, there was a big push in order to try to control screw worm. So what was happening, people in entomology were going into livestock entomology because this was a large issue. This was a key time for livestock entomologists. So in the 1950s, down in Kerrville, Texas, they actually developed this sterile insect technique in order to control control screw worms. Basically, what they would do, they put them through X-ray machines, the pupae, and due to the life cycle, males and females only mate once, and they were able to sterilize males. And then what they did was release sterilized males, but with airplanes down in the southern areas. Here you can see the program in 1962. You can see the areas in red are where screw worm were really heavily infested areas. 1964, you can see they were controlling it quite a bit in Texas, but you can see spreading into more of the Arizona, California area. 1970s, you can see it was decreasing, but by 1976, you saw a slight increase again. So they thought they were controlling it, but then they had a cycle of more problems. By 1983, there were no cases of screw worm in the United States. So you can see the push for livestock entomology was really great during the 1960s, 70s, all the way into the 80s. Now, the screw worm program is still going on. In 1991, there were no cases now in Mexico. The program is still going on. They now produce screw worms. They do have the program down in Panama City, in Panama. The good part about this, the way this worked, was in regards to getting the word out to the farmers, to the producers. So public awareness was very important, the extension part, letting the producers know, hey, if you have a screw worm problem in your farm, let us know, and we will go release sterilized males in those areas. So the mission during the 70s was public awareness. So livestock entomology was big, everyone knew about it because of these issues. The third insect I want to talk to you about are cattle grubs. These are bot flies. They are basically, the fly lays an egg on the animal. The larvae then penetrate through the animal and make their way up to the back parts of the back. The grubs then will cut a hole into the skin, and they change positions. They put their spiracles on the outside so that they can breathe, and they begin to feed. Now, at this stage, these are large grubs, about the size of my thumb. Think about, I don't have a large hand, but they are large. They form these boil-like, they're referred to as a warble, that develop. Eventually, those warbles will pop out, and they will pupate in the soil. But what is left, you can see on the bottom picture, those are like bullet holes, shot holes in the hide of that animal. So what happens, There's about a loss of about $100 million annually during the 1970s, 80s, during that time, because of this insect. That hide was no longer usable for leather, and also the meat. It produced kind of a green jelly-like meat, which was not you wouldn't want to eat that as your steak. what was happening during those times, there were some new technologies. Avermectin, which is a systemic, was very, very effective in controlling cattle grubs. So what was happening, what we're seeing now, cattle grubs are a thing of the past because of the technologies. We don't see these issues quite often. It would be very rare. But we have to be careful here, because we're now switching more, we are now seeing more organic dairies, more organic farm livestock producers, and this could be an insect that could be coming back. So this is something we should be aware of. So there, looking at these three topics in livestock entomology and how they were in the past, there was a need for livestock entomologists in the 1950s, 60s, 70s, and so forth. And with new technologies, though, things have changed. So what we're seeing now, we're seeing some things that are critical to us in livestock entomology. A lot of the people that were coming into livestock entomology during those times are now coming to the end of their careers and retiring. So what we're finding, again, like Rosanna, we're becoming an endangered population. We're also seeing very few students that are actually being trained in applied livestock entomology. And there could be a number of things for the cause of this. We're seeing now some redirection in where veterinary entomology is going. Some faculty lines are changing. We're looking, at the time, there are some issues of looking for good jobs. There were no jobs in livestock entomology, PhD levels, especially in academia. And there was also some downsizing and consolidating of agricultural programs. So things were moving in different directions. Also, many livestock entomologists are retiring, as I mentioned, and there was a study by Cuesson and Riel. I don't know, Riel, if I pronounced that correctly, but that's a study that was done in France for medical veterinary entomologists, and they found that 74% of their population are actually over 40 years of age, and 50% are actually 50 years and over. So there's a serious thing that's happening even in the European countries. So we have to be on the lookout, because we think we've solved a lot of the things in livestock entomology. There are things that we have to look forth and prepare ourselves for, especially with zoonotics. Human behavior, we're constantly changing. We're moving into the direction. We're modifying our habits and kind of moving closer to wildlife and so forth. We're also seeing climate change and the way we actually move livestock and animal trade throughout the world. So we have to be on the lookout for some issues. For example, blue tongue virus in the European countries, which would be a veterinary livestock a question and thing to address. This is a serious disease that is also found in the United States. It's more rare or even absent in more northern states, but it's very fatal to sheep and wild ruminants, and it's actually transmitted by biting midges. So this is becoming more of a hot topic in Europe, but also here in the United States in more southern areas. Also, we have to be on the lookout for specific diseases, foodborne diseases. So here's one, Enterobacter. It's an actual bacterium which can cause meningitis and sepsis in humans. It's also been found, just kind of hurrying here a little bit, in dry infant formula. So we have to be on the lookout for these things, such as E. coli, Salmonella, things on flies, because we're closing in and encroaching on farms and moving into those directions. So we have to be careful there as well. So as a livestock entomologist, we have to be where are we going? You know, if we're seeing these decreases. So we need some data to kind of examine trends in our field. So what did we do in the past? Where are we now? And where do we see ourselves going in the future? And Cuisson and Rio did a survey in 2004 in France. And so what we've decided to do is actually do a survey to medical, livestock, and veterinary entomologists in North America. And so we're developing two surveys. One will be sent to department heads and also chairs, and the other will be sent to livestock, medical, veterinary entomologists. And these two surveys will be likely going out in January and February, and I have someone at my institution who's helping me looking at how to develop a proper survey, because that's totally not my field. So if you have anyone in your department who would like to fill out these surveys, I'd love to talk to you. So the department head and chair survey will look at things such as positions, more of the what courses are actually offered at your institution, how many students are in those courses, and where are you drawing those students from? Maybe are they all entomology students? Are they coming from an animal science department, and so forth? We're also going to look at regional aspects of medical veterinary. I just pulled up some entomology departments and looked at particular courses that are actually offered. And here you can see Wyoming, we have four courses that are offered. They offer a medical course, a livestock. A lot of the other institutions offer livestock and medical at the same time. But we'd like to get some demographics in this as well. If you're a livestock, veterinary, or medical entomologist, or even someone who was in and you studied this and even went to another field, maybe you're studying aphids, you're studying bees, but you grew up as a livestock entomologist. I even want to send that to you, because we'd like to know some demographics. You know, where are you now? Why did you switch fields? What was your training, your gender, age? Are you in what position? Are you in academia? Are you in military industry? Are you a student? Your field of expertise? Even funding issues and so forth. Even students. The student population is really important, because the students are what we will draw upon in the future. So what are your interests? Are you in academia, extension? What do you want to do when you grow up? So these are things that we'd like to do in the next few months. We like to acquire this data because we'd like to, as a livestock entomologist, we see a need, and we just don't have this data. But when getting this, we hopefully will have data to take to administrators, to funding agencies, to show that this is something very important. But we have these problems, and maybe we can find some solutions by doing something like this, like a survey. So if you're interested in participating in the survey, please email me, and I will send it likely to you in January. Hopefully we'll get good responses. I do know it's a survey. You usually get about 10%, hopefully 20% will respond. It will be sending it out through SurveyMonkey. And hopefully we'll acquire enough data to present this at the Livestock Insect Workers Conference, which will be held in French Lick, Indiana next summer. And with that, I'd like to thank Karen Yanowitz, who's our survey guru, and Nancy Hinkle, who's helping me identify all these people, Alberta Brosi at Kansas State, who's a great livestock entomologist, Carl Jones, who has been helping me out with picking out department heads and chairs, and I just love your comments. So thank you very much.
Yeah, we have time for questions.
Yes?
Yeah, you primarily focused on the university basis. What about the livestock associations? Have you made them aware of these situations? And are they willing to put some dollars or funding into
a survey?
Their response, yeah.
This is something that's just been developing in the last few months. So we haven't yet. That's a very good point. And so I could actually go to some of these individuals and associations. So it's just kind of in its infancy, and I'll take that into consideration. I think it's a good point. Yeah. Yes.
Yeah, it seems it'll be interesting to find out how many students that you can find to even take the survey. Because it seems like anytime universities are putting positions up, there's no candidates that have that background they've worked with flies and other systems and stuff like that, but there doesn't seem to be any students out there.
Yes.
It's very slim that even have any training.
It's very true. And so I'm hoping what I'll also do is get, for example, I do know a few individuals who have studied in the field and why they're no longer in the field and get some of their feedback. But I've also been going into specific websites from different departments and keying in on those students who are actually doing some kind of livestock, medical, veterinary entomology, and I'll focus in on those students.
Do you think part of the problem with the students could be, it seems like a lot of the livestock people are now heavy extension appointments, hence they tend not to have students. Is that part of the problem versus in the old days when you had researchers working and they would have a slew of students?
I think what's happening in livestock, it's going more molecular. It's changing into more not as applied. It's going into maybe looking at some kind of acetylcholine esterase, and they're getting maybe not cueing in on the applied aspect. I think that's where we're seeing. But with this, I can't say for sure, and I'm hoping that this survey will give us an answer to these kind of questions. Thank you.